song ends. Mysteriously, the song ends right before it gets completely inappropriate. Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. This is William Tincup, and we're starting out our LGBT themed out week, Pride Week, and we have a wonderful guest on today. Eric, can you hear me okay? You might be on mute. Let's see here. Eric, are you on mute on your phone? Because you're not on mute on the system. Okay.
Hello?
There you go. There you go. Hey, yeah, I had all kinds of trouble getting into the host queue. Sorry about that. So first of all, we're live. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. For a Monday, Eric, I'm doing fantastic. Are you kidding
me?
You know, I'm ahead of the game.
Context is important.
And there is context is important. I kind of wish it were Friday. I had a wonderful weekend, but yeah, it's sunny outside, and it's a fantastic both a beginning of the week, but also beginning of a wonderful theme. And so with a couple things, first of all, introduce yourself to the audience. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. Well, my name is Eric Peterson. I have been doing diversity and inclusion work both inside and outside of organizations for about 16 years. A lot of the folks within the sound of my voice might know me from my stint at the Society for Human Resource Management, where for 5 years I was the manager of diversity and inclusion there. For the past year and a half, I have been working for Cook Ross, which is a consulting firm based out of the Washington, D.C. area, working with organizations all across the country and around the world on diversity and inclusion issues with a special focus on unconscious bias and all of the new research that's being done there. So at Cook Ross at Twitter and Cook Ross Inc. on Facebook, I would be remiss if I didn't point those two links out to folks. But, yeah, I'm very happily ensconced doing some really exciting work for them.
So take us into the world. LGBT, I mean, obviously it's probably top of mind for a lot of folks, more recent than not with Caitlyn Jenner. And so thankfully, you know, the transgender part of the LGBT is starting to get a little bit more traction. What's top of mind right now? What's kind of, if you were to walk somebody through what's really going on LGBT-wise, where would you start?
Well, two things, and I think that you know, you're right to kind of point out that LGBT is this umbrella acronym that really includes a lot of people. You know, so on
right.
the LG side of things, I think the thing that's on everyone's mind right now is waiting for the Supreme Court to kind of drop their decision around marriage equality. And if things go the way everyone says they're going to, unless the Supreme Court just contradicts, a lot of the justices just contradict things that they've said in the past, it sounds like marriage equality nationwide is going to be a thing, which means a lot for organizations, right? It's just, you know, now if you are legally married in the state that you reside and that marriage is recognized at a federal level, you know, you're going to have a lot of employees who are saying, hey, I've got a spouse, and actually they've had this person in their lives for the last 15, 20 years sometimes, but only now is going to be recognized by the organization they work in, which has a lot of ramifications in terms of benefits. And, you know, so there's going to be a whole lot that HR practitioners are going to have to react to based on that particular ruling. And, again, I would be not only sad but kind of shocked if it didn't happen the way that most folks are predicting that that's going to play out. So that's one thing. And, you know, we've been talking about marriage equality for a long, long time, but you know, as every state, kind of the dominoes are falling, and they all say, okay, marriage equality is now a thing in our state. It's never been recognized federally, which is huge. And so that's definitely what's on everyone's mind right now. The other side of that, as you mentioned, is the transgender question. We're finally kind of paying attention to that in a real way. For so long, transgender folks were told that the best way to handle their transition was to disappear, go through a transition in utter isolation and silence, and reemerge in a brand new environment, say goodbye to everyone you ever knew in your former life, and just show up as this new person and basically lie to everyone. Don't tell them that you're trans. Tell them that you've been this person forever and do your best to pass. And, of course, that was not only isolating and psychologically terrible for a lot of reasons, it was also really dangerous for folks to do that. And now It seems to be, you know, much more expected that people are going to transition in a much more healthy way, that they don't divorce themselves from their lives prior to their transition. They openly identify as transgender individuals, and many of them are saying, you know what, I don't like the gender presentation that I'm currently in, but I like my job, and I'd like to stick around. And so I'm gonna transition while at work, and folks are going to be, you know, who knew me then are going to know me when. And that's a real change. You know, Caitlyn Jenner and then that cover of Vanity Fair, I think, is making it more of a topic that we're talking about in media. But, you know, it's also making it a lot easier for everyday trans people. And by everyday, I just mean, you know, not world famous, not a gold medalist or a reality TV show star, you know, to have their lives and live in a much more healthy way. So it's advancing, but I think that there's still a lot of issues, and a lot of it, you know, now that I'm in this kind of unconscious bias realm, a lot of interesting parallels to happen that way too, in terms of, you know, people just not being able to let go of the person that they knew and embrace this transitioned individual who in many ways is the same, but obviously in some very substantive ways is very different than the person they knew before. And that kind of mental block is a real hurdle for folks who are transitioning and trying to be their true authentic selves in their lives, and that obviously includes in their job.
Right. Let's go back to marriage equality for just a second. From your perspective, what's the resistance? Why aren't we, you know, Ireland? Why aren't we further along? Is it religious? Is it politics? Is it just business? Is it profit? Like, why aren't we further along with marriage equality?
Yeah, that's a question for the ages. I will certainly give you my perspective on that. I don't know that I speak for everyone, but I think the major hurdle that we have to overcome as a society in the U.S. is that marriage means many things. And so marriage means a covenant between two people and their deity on one hand, and it means a legal contract on another. And so when you see LGBT couples, you know, who are kind of at the front lines fighting for marriage equality, they're talking about a legal contract. They want their partner, the person that they choose to set up a family with, to be legally recognized as their family for a whole host of reasons. I mean, you know, hospital visitation is always the one that's called out, but also, you know, tax benefits is another. When a divorce happens, you know, making sure that the person who stayed at home and raised the kids and managed the household gets, you know, something for that while their partner was out there earning a paycheck. You know, if that's the setup, you know, making sure that divorces are handled in a way that are fair and equitable to both people who are in that partnership, who are part of that family. Right now, in many states and in all of those kind of federal ways, LGBT couples, same-sex couples, are just not protected legally in the same way that heterosexual couples who decide to get married are. Most of the arguments that are used against marriage equality are kind of they're traditional and or religious in nature. And what I think the LGBT community wants to say to folks is, look, we're not trying to take over your church. You know, if you don't want your ministers to ordain same-sex marriages in your church, believe me, there are plenty of churches that we can go to who are happy to have us, and therefore we're happier to be in. And that's not really our issue. What we need is some legal recognition from the society that we live in that this is my family. And especially if a couple of either heterosexual or same-sex couples decide to raise children, that's really important that family unit is recognized by the state as a family. And so that's always been, I think, the core problem with us being able to discuss this issue rationally. And it really is, of course, my feeling is, of course, a lot of diversity issues across a lot of them, people are talking about two different things. When they think they're talking about the same thing, I see it happen when people talk about race, that white people think race means one thing and people of color think it means another. Same thing around gender, and certainly around sexual orientation and gender identity. We often are having two different conversations at once, which is why we're not hearing each other and not understanding each other.
When you hear the phrase or the term that gets thrown out, that marriage rights today are equal to or the same as civil rights in the 60s. Is that, first of all, is that just a bad way to look at it, or is that a good way to look at it?
Well, I think it's, you know, it is a civil rights issue. And so I don't like to say, you know, when we say that race was the civil rights issue of the 60s and this is the civil rights issue of today, first of all, it makes it sound like we've solved racism, which we certainly have not.
I don't think
it's problematic. Yeah, I don't think it's problematic, though, to say that it has similarities. We are talking about a population of folks who are seeking equality under the law. And a just society in which to live. And so, therefore, it's a civil rights issue, just like the civil rights issues of the 60s, which primarily focused around race, was a civil rights issue. Today, I would say that we have multiple civil rights issues at play, race, gender, and sexual orientation being among them, gender identity, you know, becoming much more prevalent in the 21st century, and some others. The disability community is becoming much more vocal now that we've seen that the ADA didn't solve all of our problems. We're having a lot of these conversations, and so there are multiple civil rights issues at play. I absolutely agree that the LGBT movement is a civil rights issue, but as soon as you try to say that this is the same as the other, I once saw a sign, somebody was in a pride parade saying, gay is the new black, and I thought, no. You know, in a lot of ways, really, no. There are different issues. There are different kinds of identities. And yet, I think they all kind of belong to the same family, but they're not the same.
So you, when you talk about transgendered, you're bringing most of the audience into a world that they probably don't think about every single day. And Caitlin, she said something really interesting on TV the other night. She said, listen, transgendered issues are 30 years behind at least lesbian and gay issues. And her whole take was, you know, look at Ellen. Ellen in our society today is totally accepted. I mean, and I'll say totally accepted because I think that's how she phrased it. Whereas she's not totally accepted. And she kind of positioned it as we're 30 years behind. The dialogue is 30 years behind. Our conceptualization of that world is 30 years behind. How did that stick with you? Is that about right, or is it wrong? Is it should be longer or shorter?
Well, you know, I'd say that I have a feeling that the transgender issue is going to move faster than the LG issues did,
right.
Just simply because we're just a little bit more open-minded these days. I mean, you know, I think that if you look at it and say, you know, when Ellen, you know, came out on the cover of Time magazine, there was a lot of shock, there was a lot of discomfort, there was a lot of folks saying, I'll never, you know, and her sitcom failed, you know, and she went through a couple of rough years. People forget that she wasn't always a talk show host. You know, she had a career that really crumbled after that moment, and she did make a great comeback, and I think she has, you know, done a lot for the rest of the community. Now we have, you know, Neil Patrick Harris and quite a few celebrities out there. I wouldn't necessarily judge the success of a movement on how well token Hollywood celebrities are doing. I think sometimes that's dangerous, you know, and I think Caitlyn Jenner probably going to be fine. Caitlyn Jenner is going to be okay. That doesn't necessarily mean that trans people across our society are doing well. Trans women of color are still the most, you know, one of the most targeted groups for hate crimes that we see. And so it's literally dangerous to be in that skin if you're not Caitlyn Jenner, you know? And so we kind of need to look at that. But I do think that she has a point in terms of, you know, 50 years ago, if you would have said to most people in HR and organizational America, one day people at work are going to be openly gay and they're going to bring their same-sex partners that they have sex with to company functions and everyone's going to be nice to them, no one would have believed it. That would have just been completely outside the realm of what people could imagine. And I think that 15 years ago, if you would have said that, you know, there are a lot more transgender people than you think and they're going to start transitioning on the job, that would have, and they're not going to leave. They're going to bring everyone together and say, hey, I'm about to present as the opposite gender, and the company is going to ask you to respect that. I think people would have reacted in disbelief, you know. And so,
right.
You know, what it sparks for me is, what's the issue right now that no one could ever believe we would be talking about 30 years from now, and what's that going to be? I can think of a couple things that it might be, but, you know, it's kind of we're not there yet. But after going through the journey we've been through around sexual orientation, the journey that we're going through right now around transgender issues, you know, I think that we might be ready to look at some new things that shock us in the present day.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because as you were talking about the transition, that it reminded me of teenage pregnancy in the 40s and 50s. In the same way that if you were a teenager and you had a kid, either you had an abortion or you had the kid, you went away.
Yeah.
You went from Texas to Kansas.
Really,
you were really hidden. Then you came back, or you didn't. You started a new life. So I definitely just looked at the way that we treated, you know, teenage pregnancy then as the way that we treat it now. Now you have a reality show. So that works out.
If you're lucky,
get over...
and a lot of people don't. I mean, that's the thing. Is that
yeah.
I think the media can
yeah.
be so helpful in so many ways as to getting us to understand issues we were normally not able to talk about. But when you see things through the safety of a television screen, it's not really impacting your life. It can
right.
be tough, because I know that in some pockets of America right now, you know, young girls who become pregnant in high school are still shunned and shamed.
That's right.
Many women who decide to terminate a pregnancy will never tell anyone. You know, that's just not
yeah.
something that they'll ever, you know, and so we have no idea really how many people in our lives have availed themselves of that
that's
procedure.
Right.
We have no idea because it's still so shrouded in silence. And I think that they're, you know, we can talk a lot about the progress that we've made, and, you know, we can nod when Caitlyn Jenner says that, you know, the LGBT community has really, they're there. And yet, how many people at your organization, and I'm talking to the HR practitioners who are listening to the show, how many of your staff are closeted? A, you don't know because they're closeted. B, you know, what's your culture like? What's your organization like? Can you see anybody at the top of your organization who is in a same-sex relationship and has succeeded? And therefore kind of letting folks know that it's okay to do that. I think most of our boards, most of our leaders, most of our executive committees are still overwhelmingly not only white and male, but also straight.
Yeah.
So who knows
yeah.
how much work we have to do. I hesitate
That's
to say that
point.
We're done.
Fair statement. I want to get to some of the work that you're doing on unconscious bias and go through the
mm-hmm.
LGBT part of that, and really what are some of the things that you see? Because I think people need examples. When we say unconscious bias, we're all riddled with all kinds of biases in there, but maybe if we gave them some examples from each one of the LGBT, do you have kind of ideas of where we can start with examples for, let's say, the lesbian community?
Sure. You know, it's interesting. It's unconscious bias is something that if you do it, here's my feeling and here's kind of the Kukross way of approaching this. If you're doing unconscious bias and you're doing it well, you're taking a non-judgmental approach to this whole thing. The whole idea is that we are human beings. We have human brains. Therefore, we have biases, and many of our biases are there for a very good reason. Our biases keep us safe. They keep us alive. And so this mechanism that you have to make very, very quick decisions is something that we all share. It has nothing to do with your morality or your character. And so, you know, we can meet people who have a very egalitarian mindset and some values that really speak to diversity and equality, and yet can hold some stories back there about, you know, LGBT people. So, you know, if you were to meet, and so much of sexual orientation, by the way, has to do with our feelings about gender. And so, you know, we'll kind of start there. With the lesbian community, you know, what is your vision and kind of your default reaction as to what a woman essentially is? And so for a lot of folks, you know, when they think women, they think nurturing, you know, they think caring. They don't necessarily think ambitious. They don't necessarily think driven. Those are things that, you know, for a lot of folks instinctively belong in the male category. And so if you meet a woman who is a lesbian and she doesn't have a husband, she in fact has a wife, you know, or is perhaps single. That's the other thing about, you know, when we talk about LG folks at work, we often just kind of make the assumption that they're all in relationships. And there are single gay people out there. And so, you know, where does the issue impact them? Sometimes at work, most of the things that we talked about, you know, revolve around, you know, partners. But, you know, I don't want to avoid them either. But, you know, it's a question you need to ask yourself, you know, what to you is a woman, and how does someone who openly identifies as a lesbian break some of your rules? And so we don't like it when people break our rules. That's kind of, you know, what one way to describe what a lot of biases show up as is that, you know, one of my rules around being a woman is that you need to present yourself in a very feminine way. We expect women to spend a lot of time focused on their appearance, you know, and making sure that they look really good. And so, you know, and looking really good has a lot of rules attached to that. What does looking good for a woman mean. And if you meet women who present a little bit more masculine, not necessarily as far as, you know, being part of the transgender community, but just not caring as much about hair and makeup and nails, a lot of times, you know, that is a stereotype of some members of the lesbian community, and not all lesbians fall into that, but many do. And so how does that impact somebody's career? How does that impact the way that you're going to view them? What stories are you immediately going to make up about a person, you know, along those lines? Or conversely, if you meet someone who is very feminine and does pay attention to all those things and meets all of your criteria about what a professional woman should be at work, and then you find out that she's a lesbian, if that kind of rocks your world in an uncomfortable way, there's some bias there that is up to you to deal with. If you are, especially if you work for an organization that has some espoused values around equality and diversity, you're going to have to kind of learn how to work with that and make sure that that person can be their true, authentic self at work.
Do you, your take on Tim Cook, you know, coming out at Apple, because you made the comment, you know, most of our leaders are still predominantly, mm-hmm. you know, Caucasian, white, heterosexual. Here's a guy that took over after, you know, Steve Jobs. And, you know, by all accounts, he's done an amazing job. B, let's just talk about the performance. Kind of looks like he's done a really, really good job. And then and he comes out. Is that making things easier? Again, is it kind of like Hollywood? It's going to be easier for him to come out, et cetera. Just what's your take on Tim Cook?
You know, I think that part of it is the industry. I think you're right. It might have been easier for him to make that statement than for others. Listen, it was an open secret for a long time. I mean, you know, everyone, it seemed, me and all my gay friends, we knew a long time before Tim Cook came out that he was gay. So I think that there was just, there was a little bit of, come on, what are you waiting for? And I think there was a little bit of impatience among some folks out there. And then as soon as he did, I'll tell you, I'll be honest, my first thought was, ugh, I hope he does a really good job. You know, because if he goes down in flames, then he's the only one, right? I mean, it's not like if he had not come, if he were just another white, straight male CEO and he didn't do a good job, other white, straight men in America wouldn't really have to worry about that. But when somebody comes out who is, you know, somebody presents themselves as somebody who's slightly different from the norm and they're the only one, that's part of our bias question again, right? We tend to make up a whole story about everyone like that. And if he didn't succeed, that would be really kind of scary. No, I think it's great that he did that. I think that it's wonderful that he, for all I can tell from looking at the situation from the outside, his identity was not a factor in him getting that position. He was the best person that was available after Steve Jobs unfortunately passed away, and he seems to be doing a great job. To your point, I do think that it makes it really probably a lot more comfortable, specifically for gay men at Apple. You know, I mean, I don't know that it necessarily helps anybody else to that degree, but in a sense, it helps all of us. I mean, I think it helps out anybody who's in, you know, the technology space, who wants to break into that role, who is gay. They can look at Tim Cook and say, hey, you know, it didn't get in his way, and I can potentially make it. I think the real cost to people who, you know, don't have those kinds of role models is that if you're at work every day and you're closeted, the amount of energy that goes into keeping that secret is energy that you could be, you know, putting forward to your work, which is better for the individual and better for the organization. One of the things that I often used to work through with people in diversity classes is a little question where I would just say, let's say it's your first day on the job and you don't want anyone to know for certain that you are heterosexual. What would you have to do to keep that secret? And the list that we came up with was extraordinary every single time. It really took people by surprise. It's not just, you know, one or two little things you have to change. You have to literally change your whole way of being at work. And not only is it exhausting, but then we'd say, okay, so how does your spouse feel about that? You know, so what's your home life like based on that? I mean, it really affects your whole world to try to be closeted at work, and it really does the organization no favors by forcing people into a closet. And so that's really, I think, what we're not just talking about being good to people. We're not just talking about letting people be their authentic selves because we like them. I mean, I think all of those altruistic values are really important, but we're also really talking about organizational performance, whether or not those individuals and those organizations can really do the good work that they're called to do if you've got people who are spending 35% of their day keeping a secret for no good reason, other than that they think people might not understand.
Well, you know, I remember watching I think it was the Trevor Project. I was watching a video a couple of years ago, and it really kind of dawned on me that I hadn't really linked depression and suicide and, you know, all of these other types of things with being LGBT. And then how do you contend with that at work? And you know, you're taking us through an example of, okay, let's say you had to hide the fact that you were, you know, Catholic or heterosexual or Catholic and heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
What lengths would you have to go to? And you could never, you'd have to be on guard all the time.
Not only the fact that it takes so much time, there's something that I talk about a lot now with my work at Cook Ross, which is called social primacy. And that is, this feeling of belonging is so important to people. If you are in a situation and you don't feel as though you belong there, if you're being excluded, or just the perception that you're being excluded, it activates activity in your brain in the same spaces that we typically associate with physical pain. And it really kind of takes over, you know, and it asks you to kind of check out. And so I talk about that when I talk about this whole concept of inclusion, that it's not a nice to have. Inclusion is not a bonus as long as you're meeting your numbers. Inclusion is really foundational to you doing your work, because people who don't feel as though they belong, the real toxic combination is, I don't belong now and I never will. And if people have absorbed those two ideas for any reason, they're going to quit. Now, I always caveat that with, I didn't say they were going to leave. I said they were going to quit. Sometimes you quit and leave, and sometimes you quit and you stay. And people
That's
who
fair.
Quit and stay show up at their desk. They do the bare minimum they have to get their paycheck or get their decent review, but they're not going to do anything courageous. They're not going to step out of the box. They're not going to come up with any innovative ideas. They're not going to name the elephant in the room that everyone else is afraid to. They are going to do everything they can to be as safe as they can in a place that feels dangerous to them every single day. And that's it's a huge cost, not only to the psychological health of your employees, which I hope we all care about, but also, you know, we know that HR is a business. We want to make sure that our organizations are doing well at the same time. And if we are to believe the stats that, you know, 10% of your population is probably on the LGBT spectrum, they belong under that umbrella in some shape or form, you know, what are we really doing to make sure that they feel they belong, and B, that the organization's got their back, so that they can step out and do that innovative work and name that elephant in the room and do all those things we want them to do.
It's really interesting, because there's so much dialogue around wellness, and you know, you can be fat at work and it's almost acceptable, you know, especially if, you know, there's a wellness initiative and you can work on it. But yet LGBT issues, you know, we don't think of it in the same way, in the same construct of, you know what, you could actually make them more productive if you here's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of work, both just, you know, physically, you know, exhausting, and also just psychologically taxing, to be closeted for 8 hours a day in the office, it's almost indescribable for anyone who hasn't done it. And the sad thing is that people who are closeted, they've gotten used to it. They don't even realize the toll that it's taking. And so they might tell you it's not so bad, but it's because they're under the water and they can't see the air anymore. And it's just, you know, it's a huge cost.
Well, Eric, this flew by. So first of all, the show's over. We're about to be over in a couple seconds. Follow Eric on Twitter at DiversityEric, E-R-I-C, DiversityEric. Thank you for being such a wonderful guest. This was a pleasure, and, you know, I think everyone – I mean, I got a lot out of it, so hopefully everyone else did.
Thank you so much for the invitation. Anytime.
Absolutely.
And happy Pride. Happy Pride.
Absolutely. The whole week we're going to be having shows on LGBT, and thank you, Eric. Have a great day.
Thank you.
All right, brother.